Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Martial. They're going for the fifth. And Rashford gets his hat-trick. And there is the five. But three for substitute Marcus Rashford. That's a leaf out of Solskjaer's own book as a player.
It's Wednesday, Champions League action. Barcelona beat Juventus. Manchester United shock RB Leipzig. Chelsea get that W and PSG as well. We got all the action. Jimmy Conrad, Jonathan Johnson, stay right here. Another crazy evening in the Champions League. Jimmy Conrad, my man, Jimmy Conrad. We got so much action to talk about. Barcelona win against Juventus. United against Leipzig. I guess Julian Nagelsmann should never wear that suit again. We got Jimmy. Jimmy, how are you, bud?
Yeah, I'm doing great. Some amazing games and some crazy scorelines today.
Crazy. All right, let's begin with the obvious one, Barcelona against Juventus at Juventus. Many thought, you know, we'll see what happens without Ronaldo. It got a little slow, but, you know, the game got going and Barcelona wins 2-0. How did you see it?
Dude, it was wide open right from the get-go. I was like, what? I thought Juventus was known for the Catenaccio, and because no Cristiano Ronaldo, they're going to stack two lines of four and really box Messi in. And that didn't happen. It was wide open from the get-go. I like the changes that Ronald Koeman made for Barcelona. Ousmane Dembele in particular, he ended up scoring the first goal. Barcelona ended up kicking on and winning 2-0. Messi, by the way, scored a penalty. I had him scoring anytime, plus 110. You're welcome, everybody that bet
you
that.
You did. Thank
I did.
You.
I had it. And what's crazy is the fun fact for you, Luis, is that Juve have only dropped two games in the group stages of the Champions League twice in 20 years. So this is their third loss in 20 years in the group stages at home, that is. And that's a crazy feat for Barcelona, especially because they were in some turmoil following El Clasico.
Well, shout out to the unluckiest player in the world right now, Alvaro Morata. He had a goal disallowed this past weekend. He had three today. Unbelievable. I mean, obviously, I think the first one, the handball, yes. But the one that was like offside, I mean, Mason Greenwood got a goal against United that wasn't offside. So I don't know, but he got very lucky. But regardless, Jimmy, here's the problem I see in this game. Barcelona, I think, deserve to win it. Much better in possession, much better going forward. Mm-hmm. But I don't know what Pirlo wants. I don't know their formation. I don't know their strategy. I understand when they go forward, they kind of want to obviously focus on Dybala pushing towards Morata. But with all the fact that they have one of the best center midfielders the game has ever seen as a manager, it's weird to me that he doesn't use them enough, or at least I see gaping holes in the midfield. And that's what I found in this game. How did you make of it, especially from Juventus's side?
Yeah, I'm looking at their lineup right now, and all things considered, I don't have too many problems with it. My only issue is that it's a different lineup than they've used before. They continue to change their lineups. They continue to mix and match. Well, so he's trying to be this, you know, this mad scientist trying to find the right connection, but the players are trying to figure out where they're supposed to move. Who am I playing with this game? And yes, I know these guys are top professionals. They get paid a lot of money to be good at this right away, but it takes time to build that rapport and to understand how people are going to move in different situations. And when you're trying to mark somebody like a Messi, who is impossible to mark, and you need people more than just one to really negate what he brings to the table, communication is key. And if you're used to one person stepping in and doing something, let's say it from a defensive perspective, and that's not happening this time around, it just opens up gaps that you're not used to. And then it's really hard to transition as well, because you're like, wait, when I win the ball, why isn't he standing where that other player used to stand, you know? And so there's these little things and these nuances. And I thought Barcelona did an excellent job of keeping the ball and staying patient and creating the spaces and looking for those triangles. And as the game wore on and more of the Morata chances didn't count, you could see it kind of dishearten Juve a little bit. And yeah, I know it sounds like, well, these guys, again, are they should be able to play through some disappointment. They should be able to play through that. But they're human beings like the rest of us. And if things aren't going their way that day, sometimes it's hard to shake it if you're not all collectively working and rowing the boat in the same direction.
Yeah, and that's exactly what happened in the opening goal. Ousmane Dembélé gets that beautiful first time cross the ball assist from Lionel Messi, and Juventus kind of just sat back. I mean, he got lucky with the deflection, but he did, like, Juventus were just not sure how to even cover Dembélé, which was really weird. And he did a really good job at taking over his chance, and away they went with that lead. And then as the game continued, it really felt that there was no strategy when Juventus had the ball. You know, Chiesa is so talented, but it seemed very individualistic, like in terms of like what he wanted to achieve. Morata was trying to do everything he can. Granted, three goals disallowed, but still, it just wasn't enough. And when you're playing at home, I understand that you're playing Messi and Barcelona. I feel that you need to take more of a stamp on the game. And to your point, that's not going to happen when you consistently offer inconsistency in your starting formation. I mean, I think it was a mistake to, like, Arthur Meller didn't start, Aaron Ramsey didn't even play, Weston McKennie came late. It was just weird. I get that Pirlo's still trying to figure it out, but brother, this is the Champions League. This is Barcelona. Let's go.
So I think, to your point, what I notice is this isn't isolated to just Juventus, but there are a few clubs right now, especially ones that have new coaching changes, that could have really benefited from a summer and a proper preseason. Right now, Andrea Pirlo has been thrown into the fire. He definitely had the owner's ear, or the people that make the decisions, like, oh, if I was in charge, I would have been doing this when Sarri was making his decisions. He got the responsibility, and now he's got to figure it out. And now he's got to answer these questions that they're probably having of him. Like, why doesn't this look better? You said all these things when you weren't coaching. Now you're coaching, and you can't make the changes that you said that you could make. So there's going to be a little I'm interested to see how this ends up playing out. I think they'll give him the full season for sure. But how long is it going to take him to find that? And he's got a lot of options at his disposal. Chiesa, was he a needed buy? I'd rather have just given more minutes to Dybala, who I guess he's got to stay healthy. But there's a lot of questions there. And on the flip side, I'm pretty happy with Barcelona. I love that Griezmann got the opportunity to start in that false nine. He doesn't look confident to me right now. He had a couple good opportunities. One hit the post. Then he had another one where Griezmann, maybe a couple seasons ago, would have buried it for sure in the top corner. So I feel like he's a little unsure of himself, which makes sense given the situation. But he dug his own hole there, right? Criticizing Ronald Koeman a little bit earlier. I do like, though, that despite the fact that Araujo went out, by the way, with an injury, so they moved De Jong back at center back. So, like, essentially, if Juve can't score that situation, what the hell is going on with their attack? Busquets ended up coming in and holding it down at CDM. And because they're so good on the ball, these guys, I mean, their best defense is just keeping the ball. Possession is their best defense.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, listen, like, it was a good response after losing El Clasico and going away at Juventus and getting 3 points, which is the most important thing. And now Barcelona are 2-for-2. And listen, the last point about Juventus, they went away at Dynamo Kiev, and Pirlo's formation was much more, you know, sort of organized. Morata, Ramsey right behind him, Rabiot and Betancourt, like, holding down, and Chiesa and Kulusevski acting like more conventional wingers. And I feel that could have helped them more today. Having said that, it's over. Barcelona win 2-0. And, you know, it's going to be tough, but Juventus probably will pick itself up after, you know, Ronaldo comes back and everything. Okay, let's talk about the next game. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, I'm sorry. Do I need to write you a letter? Send you, like, I don't know, like, I'll DM you on Instagram. I'm really sorry. Here we were before PSG. We said, well, I said PSG was just going to take advantage, redemption, blah, blah, blah. Didn't happen. RB Leipzig, you were in this too, Jimmy. We said, listen, Nagelsmann's going to come in and he's going to completely outdo you tactically. Oh, my God. 4-0 against RB Leipzig. No, 5-0. 5-0 against RB Leipzig. That's right. Anthony Martial scores the penalty at the very end. Marcus Rashford, MBE, to all you peasants. 3 goals, a hat trick with Mason Greenwood.
He came on as a super sub. He came on in the 63rd minute.
And he just said, never, ever put me on the bench again.
Unbelievable.
5-0. Julian Nagelsmann, never wear that suit again, brother. Never. Because this is what's going to happen. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. What'd you make of it?
What I really, and I should apologize to Ole Gunnar as well. I liked his squad rotation. I liked that he took a chance. He left Fernandez on the bench. He left Rashford on the bench. Cavani's on the bench. McTominay, who had been doing very well next to Fred in the double pivot. And he ended up going with a 4-1-2-1-2. And Matic was sitting in there a little bit, or Fred. And then you had Matic and Pogba right above him. And then you had Van de Beek underneath as well with Martial and Greenwood. I mean, they looked fresh. They looked ready to go. I watched the first 5, 10, 15 minutes specifically, and I love their energy. And it seemed like all the players that maybe hadn't got minutes were very hungry to prove that they deserve to have minutes. Van de Beek, I think, looked a little bit out of place. Maybe he was playing a little bit higher than normal, but I like him in midfield. I still think he makes good decisions on the ball. I think he helps support the play really well. He knows when to slow it. He's a rhythm guy, right? Same with Bruno Fernandes. I like when he's on the field too with Van de Beek and Mata. The way that they establish the rhythm is really cool, but I love what I saw from United today. And then obviously Rashford, as you said, came on and started flexing on everybody. And I didn't really mind RB Leipzig's tactics. I just thought that they got caught by surprise. And it seemed like Nagelsmann had an idea of like Rashford was definitely going to start and probably had different ways of how they were going to break down this double pivot and how, because Manchester United had been so defensive over the last few weeks that they were going to probably see something similar. And it wasn't like that at all. And they went after him a little bit and set up in a way that really countered RB Leipzig. And I don't think they were prepared. And I feel like we saw it in the semifinals of the Champions League where Nagelsmann again wore a really nice suit against PSG and got outmanaged by Thomas Tuchel, who also added a few wrinkles there. Remember, he didn't play with a straight up number nine. He played with a false nine. He had Di Maria, Neymar, and Mbappe as the front three. And they weren't prepared for that. They were expecting an Icardi or Choupo-Moting to be up there. They were waiting for a big number nine, and it didn't happen, and they weren't prepared, and that sucked the center backs out of the space, and then they got exposed by the really quick wingers, and they lost it. They should have lost that game, and I feel like we saw a lot of it here. There's that little bit of being naive, I think, from a young manager. He's going to learn from this. It's only going to make him better down the line, but yeah, he got exposed tonight.
Take nothing away from individual talent too as well. I think, you know, Dayot Upamecano is a great player, but Marcus Rashford showed him off today. It was unbelievable. But I also like the diamond midfield for Manchester United that started Matic and then Fred and Pogba with Van de Beek right in front of him. That, I think that adds a lot of composure and the ability and the freedom for Paul Pogba to do his thing, which is what happened when he assisted Mason Greenwood. But a tremendous victory, my friend. 5-0 and now 2 wins for 2. And they look ahead to Istanbul, Beşiktaş. You know, we can take 3-for-3 here, right? Anything else from this game or any other game? JJ, Jonathan Johnson will join us in a second, obviously, to break down PSG and others. But anything else that you looked at, because we know you have to go soon, anything that you saw that you thought, you know, let's talk about it.
Well, I nailed my first two bets, which was Rashford getting over one shot on goal. So tapping myself on the back for that. And then also Messi scoring anytime. So I was there. Erling Haaland ended up scoring for Dortmund. It took them pretty late to get that result, but he ended up scoring. I thought that their opponent was going to score as well. I don't think that ended up happening because we're taping it here right at the end of all these games. But I did like Sevilla doing the business against Rennes. I thought that the goal by Luke de Jong, if you guys haven't seen it yet, just a well-executed ball going wide, Sevilla knowing exactly what to do when that happens and the good
one
runs.
Touch, boom.
When you watch this goal, and I encourage everybody at home to watch it, players, coaches, just fans of the game, watch Luke de Jong, his recognition to get into a good spot to be right where the ball should be, because they could both recognize where that space was. The center back is just caught ball watching. He got caught, and oh my God, he was too late at that point. And it's just Sevilla to perfection. And they're so good in Europe. And that was another example of that. So, yeah, great games today. And I'm excited for match day 3.
Absolutely. Jimmy Conrad, always with the analysis, always with the betting tips. And guess what? He's coming back tomorrow for a Halloween special as well. Jimmy C, always good to have you, brother. And we'll see you soon.
All right. Sounds good. Thanks.
Welcome back, everybody. We welcome in now my man, JJ, Jonathan Johnson. JJ, how are you, man?
Yeah, good. Thanks. And you?
I'm good. Excited to chat to you about PSG. They got that win. It didn't look like at the very beginning Istanbul were a bit resilient. How did you see the game?
Yeah, absolutely. I think resilience is the right word to describe Istanbul Beşiktaş here. PSG found it tough going for most of the time. And then, you know, a couple of moments of magic, Kylian Mbappe and Moise Keane combining twice, giving them the 2 goals and getting them the 3 points. Big 3 points for PSG in terms of the way the group is panning out, particularly when you consider the United results as well and the fact PSG have got to go to Leipzig next. But obviously a big dampener on that for PSG is the fact that Neymar came off in the first half injured. He's got an adductor issue, according to coach Thomas Tuchel. He'll undergo tests once PSG return to Paris, which is now going to be under lockdown after the French government announced new measures which won't affect Ligue 1 and professional football being played in France, but will affect everybody else living in the country. And so obviously there's going to be a lot of eyes on Neymar's situation for the next couple of weeks, particularly as we're going into another international break where Brazil are going to be playing some important World Cup qualifiers.
Yeah, absolutely. Another injury to Neymar. We'll see how long that one takes. But to your point, it was good for Moise Keane, who had a rough start with Everton on loan at PSG. He's doing well. He had some good goals this past weekend and now in the Champions League. So this is good for the team, I guess, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think one of the things that people forget with Moise Keane is just how young he is. He's still 20. I mean, the fact that he scored for PSG tonight makes him the youngest Italian Champions League debutant to score since Alessandro Del Piero. He's got so far to go in his career, and he is a very talented player. And I think people forget that, considering how disastrous the spell was with Everton. I mean, my thinking about this was that it was very low risk for PSG to take Keane on loan. They do have an option to buy, which I think makes the deal that much better. But Keane, like Florenzi, I think that there was always more for PSG to gain than lose in this, and it's paying dividends for them right away. I think that Keane has stepped in when they've had issues trying to get Icardi on the pitch with his knee problem at the moment. He should return to training next week, but how long it's going to be before he'll be able to regularly start, we'll have to wait and see. And while Neymar and Mbappe are struggling to score in the Champions League, Keane has now stepped in and filled that void. So at this moment in time, it's a move that's really working out. And we've got Pereira as well, who's been brought in and can play in midfield. We discussed this in the preview, actually played in defence against Başakşehir here, allowing Marquinhos to play in midfield. So, PSG already starting to show a little bit of depth, a bit of versatility with some of those players that arrived at the end of the transfer window. And Keane, headlining those guys right now.
So as you mentioned, they have RB Leipzig twice, actually. They'll play RB Leipzig twice in a row. Obviously, there'll be a two-week break after the first one. Let's talk about Chelsea now. Krasnodar at home to Chelsea. Again, it started a little, shaky. Chelsea obviously taking the upper hand, but Krasnodar was holding, and then everything went loose. Christian Pulisic did really well to come on and sort of solidify things, but it was an overall good performance. 4-0. How did you see that game?
Yeah, I think it'll definitely be a confidence boost, that result. Like you said, it was a stern test for the majority until those late goals loosened up the scoreline. And I think this bodes well for Chelsea as well, particularly when you consider the result before against Sevilla being held 0-0. Sevilla running out 1-0 winners against Rennes in the other match. This opens things up nicely in the group now for those two teams. And you'd probably expect them to both go on and secure those top two spots. But for Chelsea, I think it was really important that they came back from a couple of low-scoring matches, and really showed their attacking prowess again. And we saw that in Russia.
I'm getting really tired of Jorginho's run-up. Like, I get it. Like, it's fine. But, like, whatever happened to the good old Alan Shearer smash in the top left, right? Like, let's get some of that old school back. Like, if a Panenka goes wrong, it's over. But I hate the run-up. Like, it hit the post, then the keeper, he misses. What do you make of it?
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm not the biggest fan of it. Bruno Fernandes as well also has a very gimmicky run-up, which I saw at close quarters at Parc des Princes last week. So yeah, for me, I would get rid of it. And you know what? If we're going to be doing that, we may as well bring back the old North American style penalties.
Hell yeah. Oh, Mbappé would kill everybody if that happens.
I'll tell you what, there's a lot of European players over the years I would have loved to have seen in a scenario like that.
God, that is so true. Imagine Ronaldinho like just going up against one-on-one with a keeper. It would be kind of incredible. That's amazing. All right, let's talk about some other games here. Lazio tied Club Brugge. Dortmund beat Zenit St. Petersburg. But let's focus on Sevilla beating Rennes. Rennes now losing 1-0. A really nice finish from Luke de Jong. I talked about it with Jimmy earlier. What does this mean for Rennes going forward? Not a good result.
No, it wasn't. It was obviously very disappointing. But I think the main talking point surrounding Rennes, more so than the result, is the bizarre circumstances in which they lost Eduardo Camavinga to injury and Steven Nzonzi, more importantly, through suspension. Camavinga was just very unfortunate. I mean, and if you're a conspiracy theory fan, let's not forget that his dead leg was caused by Amadou, the Sevilla loanee, who's playing for Angers this past weekend. Somehow doing his parent club a solid there. But the Steven Nzonzi situation is a really, really bizarre one. So UEFA officially made their dissatisfaction known with certain elements of the Rennes-Krasnodar match last week. And then in the afternoon, before the Rennes players are supposed to travel to Seville on Tuesday, UEFA communicate to them that Steven Nzonzi has actually been handed a one-match suspension for kicking out of a bottle on his way to an anti-doping test. For me, this is a first. It's very, very bizarre. You know, for Rennes to already be going to Seville without Camavinga, that seriously weakens the midfield. But if you take Nzonzi out of the mix as well, two of Rennes' regular starters in the midfield, to be honest, it's a miracle they didn't lose by more. I thought that they were doing very, very well to hold Sevilla goalless at half-time. And unfortunately, they were undone by a moment of magic, fantastic ball in, and like you said, lovely finish by De Jong, but very suspicious circumstances surrounding the absence of particularly Nzonzi.
Yeah, that is crazy. That's a telenovela waiting to happen. And but you're right, Sevilla could have won by more. They had 23 shots to Rennes, nearly 70% possession. The Steven Nzonzi thing is ridiculous. So what's going to happen now? You're going to completely monitor players outside of the pitch the whole time? I mean, I understand in discipline, but come on. Very weird, especially to come that late, no?
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And I think Rennes, you know, would be... It would be understandable if they were more up in arms than they are. I think they, you know, they should be commended for getting on with things as well as they have. But, you know, I think that they can feel hard done by. Fingers crossed for them from a French football point of view that they can recover and salvage something and make a fist of finishing third in the group. But obviously this puts them at a bit of a disadvantage. But like I said, a 1-0 defeat away at Sevilla, if you'd given Rennes that at the beginning of the group stage and said that they would have a chance to fight for other results elsewhere, they'd have taken it. I just think I'd be interested to know if the punishment would have been the same had it been a really big name player. You know, any of the guys that we mentioned earlier this evening, you know, the likes of an Mbappe, the likes of a Neymar, a Messi, a Ronaldo, you know, we'll cross that bridge when we come to it, I guess.
Well, I think the answer is right there. There's no way that would have happened to a player like that. Poor Steven Nzonzi. And now Rennes have to travel to Chelsea to try and see if they can get that win. Is there any other game here from tonight that you wanted to specifically talk about? We talked about Club Brugge tying with Lazio, Dortmund winning 2-0 against Zenit St. Petersburg. Anything that stands out?
Yeah, well, I thought that the Club Brugge Lazio result was obviously going to be one of interest. There were so many absentees on the Lazio side. And it goes back to what we were saying in the preview, really, that the pressure was off of Lazio after getting that win over Dortmund. Dortmund came into their match with pressure on them to get the result. You know, so I think that Lazio will probably come away from that one thinking, you know what, could have been a lot worse. Coming away with a point, 4 points from the two opening matches, we'll be quite happy with that. You know, and I think it will suit Club Brugge as well, because I'm not sure they would have banked on taking all 3 points against Zenit in the opening round of matches. But this one was important for Dortmund to get the win. They left it late, but Sancho and Haaland goals, you know, as you'd expect, two of their main men coming through for them in the end. You know, and that takes a bit of the pressure off of them now after that disappointing early result. It was a pleasure speaking with Mats Hummels over the weekend. He was looking forward to that match. He said that it was, you know, a must win for Dortmund. They really had to respond. And now they're looking to build on their away form for the remainder of the group stage. So I think that one will stand Dortmund in good stead moving forward. The other result actually that caught my eye was Ferencváros fighting back from two goals down at home to Dynamo Kiev, you know, a club who's been away from the Champions League stage for so long, to come back and do that, especially with a superb finish from top match as well. You know, for me, Ferencváros was always going to be one of the really interesting storylines coming into this group stage, just because they've been out of the picture for so long. Obviously, things got a bit ugly for them at Camp Nou against Barcelona in the opening round. So for them to fight back in heroic circumstances against Dynamo Kiev. You know, I think they'll take heart from that, and we'll see if they can make a fist of finishing third in the group.
Well, Dynamo Kiev have won just one of their last 10 UEFA Champions League matches, so take that from what you will. Jonathan Johnson, always good to have you, my friend. I know that you're speaking to us from Paris. Get some sleep, brother, so we can get going here during the week.
How do you expect me to sleep with all of this excitement? So many great games, amazing goals. It's phenomenal.
And guess what? Villa plays early on Saturday, so we're going to get that extra energy, right?
Exactly.
We're about to lose some listeners. JJ, thank you so much.
Thanks a lot, my man.
Hey, everybody. I want to thank Jonathan Johnson and Jimmy Conrad for joining me today. Make sure that you catch us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher. And we'll see you next time as we give you our weekend recap, Europa recap, and so much more. We'll see you then.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.